right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here alone for a solo interview episode. Chuck and John will be together later this week, perhaps before Thanksgiving, perhaps after Thanksgiving, but we will give you something to listen to, at least on your drive home from Grandma's house or wherever you are spending the holidays. Anyway, my guest today is Duncan Smith, a writer for Hoops Habit, and who also covers the Pistons. We will talk about the Detroit Pistons and how I did not like their offseason and how I think they're doing better with Ish Smith than I would have thought and how he thinks they're doing worse with Ish than he would have thought. Anyway, before we get there, I want to tell you guys about the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. They tell about NBA history, all kinds of fun, unique stories that you might have never known or forgotten. I just listened to the one about Pistol Pete Maravich and how he did during his career. It was really fun, really entertaining. So if you love the NBA, you want to get more of it and find out more about its past, listen to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. Also want to tell you guys about Fan Essentials. Fan Essentials is a subscription service for the intense NBA fan to get hand-picked items delivered to your house every month. They have boxes starting at $14.99. You can enter the code FBBF, as in Fast Break Breakfast, and get 30% off your subscription. You can get Grizzlies gear coming to your house each month, or whatever your favorite team is. They also have NFL teams, Major League Baseball teams, some college teams. Just go to fanessentials.net and get all the essentials you need. My guest today is an NBA writer and co-editor of Piston Powered, covering the Pistons, Mr. Duncan Smith. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Keith, how about yourself?
Doing real well. Nice to talk to you. I feel like I'm kind of like a newish Twitter follow that I follow you. So like I feel like we're kind of new, you know, friends in the internet. And so it's kind of fun to talk to you, get to know you, see what you're all about.
Absolutely, yeah. I think our relationship is on the in its early stages. Yeah,
early stages. So tell me, are you in Detroit or where are you based?
No, I'm based just outside of Windsor, which is on the Canadian side of the border. So I'm about a 40-minute drive from the city of Detroit, and then we're talking another 40 minutes or so out to the Palace, which is no longer going to be a thing next season. It sounds like.
That's right. I saw that Windsor, yeah. The only Canadian city I've been to.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I visited Detroit on a youth group mission trip when I was like 13, and so we took like a field trip over to Windsor. I don't remember really any of it. I remember being chased by pit bulls in Detroit, running around like literal pit bulls. But yeah, fun times, good times, right? Yeah.
Basically, yeah. It's the safer, somewhat more homogenous version of Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you always been in that area? Have you always been a Pistons fan?
Yeah. Basically all the Detroit sports teams, Michigan football and basketball, it's been pretty much right there. My Canadian sports interests pretty much extend to national teams, and that's about it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I actually grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. We didn't have any professional sports teams when I was a kid. We finally got the Titans. And then it was so I was like an NBA kind of just, you know, I pick whoever. And I was a big Pistons fan growing up because that was like when I was in elementary school, it was the Bad Boys. I felt like all my friends, like it seemed like everyone, I guess probably how all kids like Steph Curry now. I felt like everyone liked Larry Bird. And I was always kind of, I guess, maybe going against the flow of that. And Dennis Rodman like punched Larry Bird once. And I thought that was the greatest thing I ever saw. So I was like, man, I like these Pistons. And then
they're a little bit more counter to that whole the cool guy stuff, you know? Yeah, they were the thugs.
And so then they got really good. Like Dennis Rodman was my favorite player. And this is like back in the day when he had no tattoos. Just if I don't know if anyone can remember that. He was just like just blocking shots, diving all over the court. He might have been the first guy who started drawing offensive fouls. So in that way, he maybe ruined the sport. But anyway,
thanks a lot, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, I did grow up a big Pistons fan. And then eventually, once they stopped being so good and they stopped being on television and I never saw them again, and they changed their uniforms to those hideous turquoise horse head ones.
The teal era.
So I kind of fell off. But I still have a soft spot for the Pistons. When they got good again, when they won the championship, I was always kind of like pulling for them. Like I jumped on the Grizzlies, you know, when they announced they were moving to Tennessee. I was like, that's close enough.
But yeah, that works.
Yeah. So I do like the Pistons. I like to set that up because I'm not super high on this current iteration of the Pistons, even though this is like they're on the kind of the upswing again after being kind of not so great for a while. So I'm curious, what's your take on the direction of this Pistons roster, like as they stand or as they stand kind of coming into this season?
Well, that is, it depends on whether we're talking about with Reggie Jackson or without Reggie Jackson, because without Reggie Jackson, this is basically a non-functioning, fairly broken team, basically. They have no spacing because Ish Smith can't shoot from outside 6 feet. Their shooters aren't spectacular to begin with, so they need the help that comes from Reggie Jackson's ability to space the floor with the shot, and also his ability to run the pick and roll with Drummond. It just opens up a lot of options, and Ish just can't or doesn't really run that pick and roll.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. It's not effective, and it really hurts the offense overall quite a bit. I was doing a bit of a dive into the defense and the rebounding numbers for this team, and the starting five as it stands right now with Ish and KCP, Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, and Andre Drummond have their defensive rating is almost 5 points worse than the Portland Trailblazers, who are the 30th ranked team in defensive rating. It's broken. It doesn't right now. It just doesn't work. And that's, you know, it's because Ish Smith should be coming off the bench.
Right.
And they should have a borderline all-star point guard running the team. They don't have it. So it hurts.
Well, big picture coming into the year, like knowing that Reggie Jackson was going to be hurt, but then he's eventually going to show up, including Reggie Jackson in the picture. I'm curious how you feel about the team because, like, as I was saying, like, I was down on them. I actually kind of hated their entire offseason. I thought the Ish Smith signing, and this is where it's painful for me because I'm a huge Ish Smith fan. Like I tweet the hashtag Ish plays 30 because I had a dream that he would play all 30 NBA teams because he was he's up to like 10 or something, I can't remember, but like he was bouncing, he was doing three a year for like so long, and so like
I think he's at 10 teams in like 8 seasons now. Right. I think this is his 9th season, so he's, you know, I mean, it's going to take a long career, but he could do it. Yeah. Anybody can do it. He's probably the leader in the clubhouse.
Well, the problem is with the 3-year contract now, he needs to burn some bridges in Detroit. They need to move on. But no, so like I have a buddy who, like, when Ish was first in the league, I would just text him. And I didn't text this guy hardly at all, but he went to Wake Forest where Ish Smith played, and I would just text him every time Ish got waived or signed somewhere. Because it was like every couple of weeks the first couple of years of Ish's career. But that being said, when Detroit signed him to like an actual salary, you know, I think it was 3-year, $18 million, it was like, for me, I was like, oh no, like Ish Smith is the fun fill-in guy. You don't want him to be like the guy that you've planned on. Like, and that's even, so like they spent money on him, so I was worried about that. And then they signed a Boban Marjanovic, who again, much like Ish Smith, was kind of a cult hero for myself and for our podcast, and I guess like all of NBA people, just all League Pass junkies, we were into him.
Oh yeah.
But for me, he just seemed like kind of a fun novelty cult hero guy, not someone you actually sign to, you know, have an important job on your team, and especially one where it's like you already have one big center who's your centerpiece, Andre Drummond, and then John Luehr, who was the best of those signings, but a guy who, for me as a Grizzlies fan, like I was kind of bummed when they promoted him one season, like they got rid of a couple guys and like John Luehr will now be our 7th or 8th guy. And my take on John Luehr has been, he's a nice guy, like solid bench player. But if like you get excited that John Luehr's coming in the game, that reflects poorly on your basketball team. Like you're probably not an elite basketball team. So all those things rolled together. In the offseason, I was like, oh man, I kind of thought Detroit was building something. And then they did all these signings and I hated them all. So I'm curious how, as a Pistons fan and someone more closely following the team, how you felt about it all.
Well, your comments on Luer are interesting because Piston Twitter gets excited when John Luer comes into the basketball game.
I'm telling you, that's not a good sign of franchise health.
Well, at the moment, no. This is, you know, minus Reggie Jackson, where they are. Before Reggie got hurt, I had this as a 50-win team. 4 or 5 seed in the East was pretty much my projection. Basically, that's a little bit worse than the pace they had after the Tobias Harris trade last year. And they had, whatever you think of Ish Smith and Boban and John Luer, this bench is leagues ahead of what they had last year with Steve Blake and a rookie and a couple more rookies who might not, you know, see much action in the NBA this year, if at all. This bench is... It can be competent. It can, like, not give away 10-point leads in the blink of an eye like last season's did. So the Reggie thing really threw everything into a pretty significant tailspin. This team is worse without Reggie than I thought they'd be. Mm-hmm. It does turn out that borderline all-star point guards make a difference when your next best player is Andre Drummond. And then after that, you know, you've got basically KCP and Tobias Harris, and then a pretty steep decline after that, I think.
Yeah. They had, well, so even healthy, I was thinking this was more of a, I couldn't get into the excitement where I saw, like, Vegas had win total somewhere around like 46, 47, depending on the day. And I saw a lot of people picking them to be like a home court advantage East team. And I still couldn't wrap my brain around it. It's funny you say they've been worse without Reggie than you thought. For me, I mean, we're recording this after they just lost to the Rockets on Monday night. And for me, actually, a couple days ago, I was thinking, hey, they're above 500. I thought they'd be way worse, you know, without Reggie Jackson. So it did seem like they're treading water. They are going through a really tough stretch of the schedule. And I still think they can, you know, they're not going to lose touch with those East playoff teams by the time Reggie Jackson comes back. So do you think when Reggie Jackson comes back that he will be able to shore up some of these issues? Like, you talked about the defense of the starting lineup. I know the starting lineup also has like a negative net rating. And just like the team doesn't rebound at all. That isn't really Reggie's thing, but you hope that the dominoes will start falling where everyone will start doing their job a little better. And this team will start being what more you envision they would be.
Yeah. I think the pieces are just going to fit a little bit better once he comes back. I think that production around, like, across the board is going to improve. Like, right off the bat, Andre Drummond is shooting less than 50%, which, you know, he's got a range of about 4 feet anyway. And he doesn't, you know, it's not like he's expanded that range. So him getting a lot more shots, like, at the rim in, like, good positions out of the pick and roll, like, just lobs and dunks and stuff like that, that Reggie can provide him that Ish Smith absolutely really just can't. That's going to make a big difference. And the kind of gravity that Drummond and Reggie commands out of that pick and roll is going to open up shots, I think, from the perimeter for, like, KCP and Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris. And it's going to become more of that 4-out, 1-in thing that that Stan Van Gundy likes to run. I do have a theory as well about that, the rebounding, because this is I don't know if you saw my Twitter stream that I was just launching out this afternoon, but they are rebounding. The starting five of the Detroit Pistons is they have a worse rebounding percentage than the 30th ranked rebounding team in the NBA, which just doesn't seem like it should be the case with Andre Drummond on the floor, period. But I kind of have a theory in that, like, defenses can pack the paint so much more when they don't have to respect Ish Smith. So, like, as opposed to stretching out the defense a little bit more and making them work to get their defensive rebounds, you've got 5-on-4 in the paint on defense already. So I think that having whoever is responsible for covering Reggie Jackson dragged out of the paint a little bit more might be, even if it's just a marginal improvement on that rebounding end, I think that might make a difference. Because Reggie Jackson himself doesn't just scream rebounder.
Right.
But there's got to, there, you know, it seems like the most likely cause and effect situation. Because it's the only thing that really jumps off the page at me that that seems like it might fix that rebounding issue, which is really glaring. Like that starting five, for some reason, featuring super rebounder Andre Drummond, cannot rebound to save their lives, and it's kind of preposterous at this point.
Yeah, so what Andre Drummond is, we are NBA fans, we know him as the absurd rebounding totals and his athleticism, his size, his agility. But like you said, like, you know, I think people are surprised that Pistons aren't better at rebounding because we think of Andre Drummond. And it's also, we think that he's a better rim protector than he is. He's actually not a super good rim protector as far as, you know, like opponents scoring against him and the shot blocking that he's getting. So I'm curious, what do you think, now that we're several years into the Andre Drummond career, do you think he still has somewhere to go? Like, does he have more potential that he hasn't tapped? Or is this kind of, is this just who he's going to be?
I have this feeling that this is basically it. It sounds like he spent a lot of time this summer working on his post-up game, working on his free throws. Over a small sample, he's actually showing a great deal of improvement in the free throws. He's, I think, just a touch below 50%, maybe a touch above 50%. I don't recall, but it's very close either way, which isn't great. But when we're talking about the worst free throw shooter in NBA history by like 8%, you know, you're gonna take a 50% shot out of him. But there is the fact that he's not a rim protector and has really not shown any improvement on that. And he is somewhere in the mid to high teens percentile, from the post, which just from a guy with his size and a guy with his athleticism, it just doesn't seem like a guy like that should not be good at the post, especially when he dedicated his summer to working on it and just didn't get any better. So I really think that what we have with Andre Drummond is a very athletic, somewhat mercurial big man who is pretty much at his ceiling. That's my take on Drummond.
Yeah, I feel like my anticipation or expectation of his career a couple years ago was that he would hit that Dwight Howard apex that Dwight Howard had, or at least he could approach it. You know, that was the hope. And obviously with Stan Van Gundy being in Detroit, there was so many shades and like, oh, like he's going to build the same offense around this absurdly good near MVP, you know, potential level defensive center who just dunks and dominates the paint. And that doesn't really happen. And it's probably not fair to Andre to compare him to that. But so now that probably hasn't happened or isn't happening, do you still think the idea of like having him as the anchor of the team and then having, you know, playing that four out with just the forwards and the shooters with the Detroit pieces, do you think that's still like the right way to go? Or does this team need to at some point maybe transition from what their plan was?
I think as far as like realistic options, I think that holding the course is probably the best plan, especially like, once again, like back to the whole, it all comes back to Reggie Jackson. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't even like phrase it in a way that doesn't just like circle around back to Reggie Jackson. But my view of Drummond's season so far is just like so tempered on the fact that like he doesn't have chemistry with Ish Smith whatsoever.
Right.
It just, you know, they're not vibing, you know, like it's also because they've got like a training camp, a couple preseason games, and like a dozen regular season games. And, you know, maybe it takes a little longer for a couple of guys like that to get on the same page. And there's no denying that Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond click when they're on the floor together. I think that he can look better depending on who he has around him. So not just to make it Andre and Reggie. I think that the people that he has around him can make him better and vice versa. I think these are pieces that can work. Tobias Harris and KCP, I think, like, they're best versions of themselves. I think they fit really well with what Andre Drummond can be. So, I mean, you plug that missing piece in there, which is a borderline all-star point guard, and I'm not ready to say that they should transition from, like, this four-out, one-in thing. I think that it can work. I also think that, like, anything resembling, like, a championship window is, like, not even in the picture for the Detroit Pistons in this particular generation of Piston basketball. But I mean, that's okay, because like any given season, maybe four teams have a shot at winning. I think there's other things that you can aim to achieve in a season without trying to win a title every single season.
No, that's totally legitimate. There's a lot more than just winning the title, because I mean, all the teams have to play, and they all have fans. Like, I'm a Grizzlies fan, and the Grizzlies are in an incredibly great run right now of just making the playoffs. And I'm more of the boat like, man, if we can make it to the second round, that's a great place to be. You know, like that's pretty awesome. I haven't been spoiled before. Like, even growing up as a Fairweather Pistons fan, it didn't spoil me to win a, like, you know, I felt like I actually had a team. Tell me about Tobias Harris. I haven't seen a ton of, and I should have probably said this upfront disclaimer, I haven't seen as much Pistons basketball this season as I might have liked to. But what I have seen, he looks really comfortable in his skin so far. Like, he looks like he's shooting more comfortable. He knows what he's doing. So I think in Orlando, and then last year when he switched over to the Pistons, it was still a guy where you said, like, he has potential, but I don't know if he's going to put it together. So what can you tell me about how Tobias has been playing this season?
This season, I think he's been better than I expected him to be, actually, this season. Bringing up his numbers now, actually, because I want to make sure that I'm not talking out of left field here. The first half dozen games or so of the season, he basically carried the team. He's averaging 22 points a game, I think, on like almost 60% shooting from the floor. Like, he was stellar, and it's been kind of up and down since then. But I think some of that is also because, like, the book is sort of out on the Pistons. You know, like, you talk about, like, a baseball pitcher, like, his first time through an order is going to be better than, like, his second and third time through an order, because, you know, teams, players, batters, or whatever, will get a feel for you. Guys, like, first time playing a team will be better than his next time playing a team. You know, the book is out, and people figure you out a little bit. So I think that's probably what I would pin my interpretation of why the Pistons started off pretty well and have cooled off considerably. And Tobias Harris is part of that as well. He's had a bunch of, like, single digit scoring games since the beginning of the season, and he hasn't shot less than he's had two games of one of 10, one of 11 shots, but usually he's taking like 15 or 16 shots, and he's been less productive this second half of the season that we've played so far. But I think that he does provide, I think, the best, like, post presence for the Pistons. He's a very competent ball handler. I was looking at the Synergy deep dive numbers recently, a couple days ago, and he actually is the most efficient ball handler out of the pick and roll for the Pistons, which says something about how grim it is with their pick and roll options. But he's perhaps the best ball handler the Pistons have right now. I think he's really vital to what the Pistons are doing. And I'm still kind of blown away at the virtually just essentially like free price that they got for the Magic. You know, it was just a complete fleecing.
I'm still befuddled by everything that Orlando has done over the last couple of years.
The Magic have done some really dumb things over the last, like you said, couple years. But I think that the Tobias Harris trade is, like, by far the best.
Best
for, like, the team, like, fleecing them. Worse for them. Like, I still can't believe they didn't get, like, a second-round draft pick out of that deal.
Like, I mean, and even looking at it now when they have Jeff Green playing, you're like, wouldn't you rather Jeff Green be Tobias Harris? Like,
for the
right
same
now?
Amount of money?
yeah. For the amount of money you didn't want to pay him. We should probably talk about a man we call on our show Kinsane Clown Posse, and that is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Feel free to use that in your own Pistons world. But Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he's a guy who right now there's a lot of talk, because there was talk about trying to get an extension done, and it seems like, from what I've noticed, some Pistons fans are balking at what his price tag will likely be. So how do you think that contract's going to play out next year?
I understand that he's hoping to get offers somewhere in the $20 million per per season range. Now that's not starting at 20 million, I don't think. I think it's somewhere in the average. So we're probably looking at like starting at say 16 or 17, which, you know, in this current market is, it's really not that unreasonable for even an average starting player. A few days ago, actually, I did a breakdown of pretty much everything that's going to go into the considerations that the Pistons have to make with signing him, including, like, you know, a guy who signed a contract for, say, $12 million in 2014. That's a $20 million contract in 2017.
Right.
Like, there's, like, no difference whatsoever. Like, if you loved the Danny Green deal, you would probably like a KCP deal for $20 million in 2017. Like, as strange as that sounds, the way the numbers work, it's comparable. And especially considering the fact that, like, the Pistons are capped out, you either keep KCP for pretty much whatever the market dictates, or your starting shooting guard next season is Stanley Johnson, who might or might not be an NBA player right now.
Right.
Or Darren Hilliard, who, again, might or might not be an NBA player right now. So, like, barring some sort of a trade, which gets kind of weird with the fact that he's a restricted free agent, like, you can sign a trade a restricted free agent. I've, you know, learned all this stuff for this post specifically.
Right.
But you can't sign and trade a restricted free agent if he has signed an offer sheet. So then you have to make this deal quick, and you have to, there's just so many different little twists and turns that it just seems as though a guy like KCP is not going to get signed and traded as a restricted free agent. So it's pretty much like you let him walk and then replace him with nothing because there's no cap space, or you just like try and get him off the market before, like, you know, some team like the Nets tries to swoop in and throw all of their cap space at him, and then you have to.
Well, I mean, here's the thing,
out, you know,
with them, I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't go ahead and extend him, because even though, like, the book on KCP is he looks great until, like, you know, like, as far as, like, he's athletic, he's a great, great defender. He's, you know, a good size for a shooting guard, and there's not that many. Like the NBA, there's a dearth of, like, athletic shooting guards. It's just his shooting percentages are low. And it's like, that is like, well, he can't shoot and all this stuff, and he has really bad games, you know, always sprinkled in. But, like you said, it's very similar to a lot of situations where if you understand it's KCP or nothing. It's like what the Grizzlies went through when everyone's like, can we give Mike Conley the richest contract in NBA history? You're like, yes, because if it's not him, we have to sign Jordan Farmar again. Like, there's no one not in the, you know, we have to sign someone not in the NBA. Like, it's either do you want to have a good player or no player? So, like, I have avoided any Twitter arguments I see popping up, people talking about KCP. I'm like, guys, boy's going to get paid. Like, because, and it's like how Tristan Thompson, you know, everyone, this always dies out during the playoffs, but like during the regular season, people are like, this guy makes $18 million a year. And then you see him dominating the playoffs. But it also is the Cavs had the option of having Tristan Thompson or no one, you know? So it's like.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, Tristan Thompson is an excellent example because KCP is represented by Rich Paul.
Oh, yeah.
And that means that KCP is going to get every goddamn dollar out there.
Yeah.
And like trying to pretend that that's not the case is, you know, kind of foolish. And I think that the Pistons probably made the right move in not extending him because he wasn't going to settle for less than like the top dollar, you know, at least like this year they have the opportunity to let the market dictate what his price is. And the only reason to extend him would have been if they're going to get some sort of a, you know, hometown discount, which is completely ludicrous out of a guy who's like 23. And this is going to be his big payday. Like, he shouldn't go for a hometown discount. And I don't really believe that kind of thing exists anymore anyway, unless you're Tim Duncan and you play for the San Antonio Spurs and you've made $250 million over the course of your career.
Or if you're Brandon Wright and you realize your knees are never going to work again.
Yeah, and you got to get that money now. Yeah, so, I mean, like, if you weren't going to save any money, there's no reason to extend him. Just let the season play out and, take things as they come at the end of the year.
I still think people are going to be mortified when people offer KCP even more money. Because again, like you said, like it's one of those things where I don't remember what Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford signed for, but they signed for too much. And then it's like, if you look at this as like Danny Green's contract, $10 million, you know, 3 years ago, now that's just $20 million. Well, KCP is probably going to get even more. So that's why I thought maybe the Pistons could go ahead and lock in at something that was eye-popping and did not seem like a discount. But then, you know, looking ahead, it might actually been. But who knows? If I'm Rich Paul, I just show them how much they paid Ish Smith and Boban combined, and I'll say we'll play for that.
Yeah, well, Rich could also point at Tom Gorris's new $100 million mansion and say, "Don't worry about it, just pay him."
That's right.
You're not that worried about the money, just pay him.
Yeah.
And I have gone to war on Twitter in the KCP camp, so I am fully on record, and I have been living and dying with his 1-point games as I'm writing this post, like trying to back him up. So
right,
please, KCP.
Yeah,
please. I've got your back. Get mine.
I'll back you up, but also I'll back you up from the distance of I don't think he's that good. But what are you gonna do? You got to keep him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think he's a little bit better than most people think he is, but at the same time, like it doesn't really matter if he's that good. It's Darren Hilliard is not that good.
Right.
Yeah. You
know? Exactly. Yeah. All right, hey, well, wrapping up, I skipped past it when we started. It is our tradition to talk breakfast. Do you have a favorite breakfast?
Oh, I do. I love a good Eggs Benedict.
Eggs Benedict, nice. Do you need what goes on? Like the hollandaise sauce? What is your perfect?
A nice basic hollandaise sauce is good. I also recently learned, actually, that I like a good salmon Benedict, which...
Okay, yeah.
Is brand new on me, but it turns out that this is a thing that I really like. I'm trying to remember exactly what all went into it. It was one time, I'm not entirely sure that I was of my soberest mind when I had it, but if your listeners happen to like salmon and or Eggs Benedict, don't pass it up. Give it a shot.
Oh, I would hope they do. Also, sorry, follow-up, unrelated to this Eggs Benedict. Our boy Beno Udra's up there with some crazy hair. But I'm curious, when Reggie Jackson comes back, what happens to Beno? Is he out of the rotation? Because he's kind of clicking right now.
I hope that he's not. I would actually like to see him getting minutes similar to, if not perhaps greater than, Ish Smith is getting. He's got a better net rating. I'm looking at his numbers right now. He's got a better net rating. Defensive rating is better. His assist to turnover ratio is better. His rebounding ratio is better. Let's see. His effective field goal and true shooting percentages are both better. And I think his per 36 minute numbers across the board are superior to our Ish Smith.
Well, he's also benefiting from that glow of being up next to our boy John the Badger.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's easy. It's easy when it comes off him.
Yeah. I think John Lewis should be starting for this team, by the way.
Really?
The Pistons' second most used lineup, which hasn't been played in a week to date, is also, what is it, the second? They have the second highest net rating of all lineups that have played 50 minutes or more together.
Yeah.
It's like, I think they're like plus 21.3 or something, with a stellar rebounding percentage. Like it's a lineup that looks good. It's basically, it's Ish, KCP, Tobias Harris, John Luer, and Andre Drummond. Marcus Morris goes to the bench.
That kind of makes that makes sense to my head, you know?
Yeah. I like that lineup. I'd like to see that be a thing.
Yeah. Let's put that small sample size to the test. But as I say, when you start clamoring for John Lewis to start, that's Stockholm syndrome. Your team has a problem.
You're not wrong.
All right, hey, well, Duncan, thanks for stopping in and talking about the Pistons. Can you want to plug some stuff or tell people where they can read you?
I'm writing a lot of stuff on Hoops Habit these days. Just various NBA topics. You know, I have a thing coming out on Nick Stauskas tomorrow. I'm probably going to write about Chris Paul later this week. And pretty much every day, every couple days, I've got stuff coming up on Piston Powered. And even when I'm not writing, I'm pretty pleased with the kind of content that we have on Piston Powered in general. So if you like the Pistons, or even if you're ambivalent about the Pistons, kind of like I am most of the time right now, go on over to Piston Powered and give us a read, why don't you?
That sounds great. Yeah, you guys go check out Piston Powered. Also, he's at Duncan Smith MBA, easy to spell, on the Twitter, and you can follow him there. All right, Duncan, thanks so much. We appreciate having you you coming on.
Thanks, Keith. It was a pleasure.
All right, that was great stuff from Duncan Smith, letting me talk all bad about the Pistons. I do like the Pistons. I hope they're good. I hope Reggie Jackson comes back and everything clicks. They're a team I like cheering for in the Eastern Conference. For our couple announcements for our Nashville people and our Grizzlies fans, our first Grizzlies watch party has been scheduled. It will be November 30th for the Raptors game at Edley's East in East Nashville. So November 30th, come watch the Grizzlies play the Raptors with us. The rest of you guys, check out our Patreon. We're doing our Patreon Picks League that has a prize every month. So if you want to get in on December, you can go to patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast. Rest of you guys, you can follow us on Twitter at fastbreakbreak. Like us on Facebook. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.